All right, Jabosei, good evening. So first of all, a tremendous thank you to Reb Chaim for delivering the shiur last night with about 10 minutes notice. So I it's really just a tremendous hakaras hatov. I apologize. I was speaking at a different event and it ran about an hour, 45 minutes behind schedule, and I couldn't leave as I was on the schedule to speak as well. And so thank you, Reb Chaim, on behalf of the intention. It must have been a different event. Either that or we missed each other there also. Yes, Chaim is on the speaker circuit now. Baruch Hashem, we put him on the map. But seriously, thank you so much, Chaim. You know, I didn't want to cancel the shiur, so thank you, Chaim, for stepping up mamish last minute. So we are picking up. So tonight, we are up to Chaf Aleph Amad Aleph. Where did you leave off? Chaf Beis Amad Aleph. Sorry. Four lines down, three lines down, immediately. Okay, perfect. Okay, so let's begin. So Gemara says, "Umi islev Rabbi Yehuda hirhur." So does Rabbi Yehuda actually subscribe to the concept of hirhur? In other words, does he say that if a person thinks words of Torah but doesn't actually say them, that halacha lemaisa, that is permitted? Vatanya, we learned the following: Bal keri she'ein lo mayim litbol kori kriyashma ve'einu mevarich lo lefanav lo lachara. So we learned that if you have a bal keri, a man who had a seminal emission, and he doesn't have water for immersion, right? He doesn't have access to a mikvah. So what's the halacha? He says Shema, but he doesn't make the brachas before or afterwards. Va'ochel pito u'mavarech la'achara. Furthermore, again, he eats his bread, right? And if he eats his bread, he doesn't make a bracha before he eats, but he does make a bracha after he eats. Ve'inu mavarech lefaneha. Aval maharher belibo ve'inu motzi b'svasav. But halacha l'maaseh, again, any bracha that he's not permitted to make, he could cogitate on, right? He could think of the bracha. He could, you know, mentally dwell on the bracha, as long as he does not actually say the words with his lips. These are Div Rabbi Meir. These are the words of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Huda says, "Bein kach u'bein kach motzi b'svasav." So this is incredible. Rabbi Huda says that halacha l'maaseh, a bal keri could recite anything. Bal keri could recite anything. So it's obviously now we have a contradiction, because ultimately beforehand we were saying that Rabbi Yehuda requires hirhur, that in the situation of a bal keri, where halacha l'maaseh, again, he doesn't have access to a mikvah, the most he can do is go ahead and cogitate on these brachas or on these tfilos. But here Rabbi Huda is on record as saying that halacha l'maaseh, you could articulate it. So what's cogitate means to think about. Yeah, it's actually not one of my made up words. It's actually a real word. Yeah, I'm sorry. It's actually real. I know. The problem is my verbal credibility has eroded over the years. It's a fair question. So the Gemara says as follows. So the Gemara says, Amram Nachman, so how do you reconcile this apparent contradiction in the Shita of Rabbi Huda? So Amram Nachman bar Yitzchak, Asan Rabbi Huda kihilchos derech eretz. So we'll say this is very interesting. Rabbi Huda essentially made davening like learning the halachos of derech eretz. Now we'll say, what are the halachos of derech eretz? So I'm going to go a little bit out of order in Rashi over here. If you'll notice on this daf, Rashi actually is in both columns, on the right and on the left. If you look at the last two lines on the right-hand column, Rashi says, Hilchos derech eretz kigon, darchen shel tamidi chachamim shibraisa uperek ben azai hanosein arba dvarim elibo. So I'm supposed to say there was at least a body of rabbinic teachings called Hilchos derech eretz or Maseches derech eretz. And Maseches derech eretz, again, just like it sounds like, there were all these different halachas just about how to be a mensch, how to have derech eretz. So, for example, the halacha that Rashi is referencing over here is that a Talmud Chacham can't act arrogant. Right? Talmud Chacham may have a lot of wisdom, may have a lot of power, may have a lot of influence, but halacha l'maaseh, he has to remain humble. So, this is interesting. So, Rabbi Huda, so we're going to see over here that Rabbi Huda allows a bal keri to learn Hilchos derech eretz. Right? We're going to see that in just a moment. And effectively, Rabbi Huda treats tefillah like Hilchos derech eretz as well. The same way you can learn the halachos of derech eretz without going to the mikvah. I'll say, by the way, what's going to be the logic of well, actually, let's see. Let's go a little bit weiter. This sign, you'll both say, well, look at the b'raisa. V'odatam levonecha v'levnei vanecha. Uksiv, so we'll say, the pasuk says, you shall go ahead and literally to teach your children and your grandchildren, instruct them, which ultimately, again, and right afterwards, what does it say? Right afterwards, it says, what should you instruct your children and your grandchildren about? Remind them about Sinaitic revelation. Actually, very apropos to Parashas Yisro. Right? remind them that we stood at Har Sinai. Now, what does that mean? Now, what does it mean that I'm supposed to instruct my children and my grandchildren about Har Sinai? What is that? What does that mean? So the Gemara says it's incredible. So teach us the following halacha. Just like I will say, when we received the Torah, right? We didn't receive the Torah. We didn't receive the Torah kind of like in a relaxed, chilled fashion. But rather, again, how did we receive Torah? We received Torah literally again with fear, with trepidation, with trembling. Af kan be'ema be'ira bereses u'bezia. So too, again, any time that you learn Torah, Torah should be learned in this same emotional state, with this fear, with this trepidation, with this trembling. Now, what does that mean, Abosai? What does that mean practically? So first of all, before we go on, I'll tell you something. Well, actually, let's finish this up. He says, Mikan Amru, based on this we learned, Hazavim v'amitzaroim, uba'in al nido, al nidos, butarim likros b'tora, b'nevi'im b'ksuvim, lishnos b'mishna, v'gimara, b'halochos b'agados. So I'll say Azov, right? So Azov, remember, is a man who has an emission, but it's not a seminal emission. Mitzora, someone who has saras, we loosely translate as leprosy. Ba'in alanidos, this is about a man who accidentally had relations with a woman who's in nida. Now Rashi points out over here, we must be talking about a situation where he went to the mikvah, so the seminal emission issue was taken care of. But we'll say the halacha is that if a man has relations with a woman who's in nida, the same way that a woman who's in nida is tamea, she's ritually impure, if a man has relations with her, he too is now ritually impure as well. Right, but we're talking about a case over here where he's ritually impure, but halacha lemaisa, he went to the mikvah for being a balkari. All of these people are permitted to learn Gans Torah, right? They can learn the entire Torah. Aval ba'alei kerion asurin. But a balkari, a man who has a seminal emission, is not permitted to go ahead and learn Torah until when? Until ultimately he goes to the mikvah. Now, Bosai, now what exactly is this limud? So, Bosai, this is really very interesting. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says over here, Mikan Amru, right, still in the right hand column, like in the middle of the right hand column, Kalatmeim utarim betorah, Sha'af hein yicholum lios be'im avarasa. So, Bosai, look at this limud. It's actually quite fascinating. The juxtaposition of the two phrases, you will instruct your children and your grandchildren, and then right after that is the phrase, the day in which you stood at Har Sinai. So what does that do? What that teaches us is, when Torah is learned in future generations, Torah must be learned in the same state as it was received at Har Sinai. Just like at Har Sinai, it was received with a sense of awe and trepidation and trembling, so too Torah can only be learned in a state of awe, trembling, seriousness, and fear. Now, what does that mean? So therefore, even if a person is tamei, they can still learn Torah. Why? Because tuma has nothing to do with levity. Nothing to do with levity, right? Again, a person becomes tamei. If a man becomes a balkari, he has a seminal emission, so there's quite a possibility that he was, again, one possibility is that it was permitted intimacy, but there are a number of other possibilities, a nocturnal emission of some sort, or just an emission of some sort, that may be representative, ultimately, of a less than serious type of behavior. So it's an interesting limud over here. Rabbi Huda is saying is that halacha lemaisa, Torah requires a seriousness. I remember that when I first, when I came back from Eretz Yisrael, I was learning it in Yeshiva University, the mashgiach there was Rabbi Yitzchak Kohn, and I remember the first Musar Shmuz that he gave on Thursday night, first Musar Shmuz is that, and he was so interesting, he said, you will never become a Talmud Chacham if you learn Torah with your feet up, a Gemara in one hand, and your Coke in the other hand. And I remember, like as a kid, like listening to it, like, I don't know, it sounds pretty nice. You know, that sounds great. But what he was trying to teach was herein lies the distinction between Torah and other bodies of knowledge, right? If you're studying history or you're studying literature, from which there is whatever it is, which there is so much to learn, you don't need to necessarily be in a particular state of spiritual preparedness in order for that information to be absorbed into your mind. Right? You want to sit, you want to stand, you want to have your feet up. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. As long as your mind is open, you'll absorb the information. Torah is different. Torah is just fundamentally different. Torah is, you know, the Chazal called, the Midrash calls Torah the daughter of the Ribono Shel Olam. Torah is the embodiment of divine wisdom. That only permeates the soul if a person is in the right state of preparedness. If I'm not in a serious state, then at the end of the day, you might get some knowledge, you might pick up facts, but you're not going to absorb the enormity of Torah. So it doesn't literally mean that when a person sits down and learn every single time, they have to be like shaking and quaking and fearful and this, that. What it means is a seriousness. Just a seriousness. And I will say, you know, this is like a big thing for us today. You know, just like, you know, kind of, you know this, right? You know that so much of my experience with Torah is dependent on the frame of mind I am in when I sit down to learn, right? If I'm distracted or whatever I'm doing. So I'll hear information. It really doesn't imprint on my neshama. But if I'm in the right mental state, right? If I'm plugged in, if I'm tuned in, then Torah doesn't just enter my mind, it enters my soul as well. So interestingly enough, this is just a fascinating insight. Now you begin to understand why this like preoccupation with the Balkari, right? What does it matter? A man had a Sefer Mishnah, didn't have a Sefer Mishnah. Why does that have an impact on his ability to learn Torah? Because again, the seminary mission could happen for a whole variety of reasons. Some of them permitted, but some of them also as a result just of not being careful with one's thoughts or not being careful with what one looks at or a variety of different things. So that represents a diminished spiritual attentiveness. And when I have a diminished spiritual attentiveness, Torah doesn't have the same level of impact on me. It's a really incredible idea. So the Gemara goes right there.
So a person who is Balanida is better than someone who is just
It's a person who is Balanida, went to the mikvah for his Balkar. So he's Tamei. Now again, remember, we're talking about a situation, let's assume over here, he didn't intentionally have relations with Anita, right? Again, he was with his wife, and it turns out that she was Anita, you know, or whatever the circumstances were. It doesn't have to be a case of a guy who mamish, like, hinani mukhna mazuman to commit
naver. So if it was intentional?
If it was intentional, the halacha would still be the same. In other words, if it was intentional, it would be the same, because again, it's a din in tumah. It's the same difference. What happens if a person goes out tonight and decides, you know what, I'm eating a cheeseburger and a Diet Dr. Pepper? I have to get that in, right? So again, are you allowed to learn Torah afterwards? Yeah, right? But I just did Navira, like Bemezin. See, again, it's Chazal chose to kind of like, there's a certain lack of seriousness or lack of attentiveness that could potentially precede these non-permitted intimacy seminal emissions. I think that's really what Ezra was focused on over here. Because in Avera, we do plenty of Averas, yet we still learn. Seems to be Dafka focus on the Balkari. So the Gemara goes right. Rabbi Yossi or Yossi says, Shonehu Berigilios. So Rabbi Yossi says, you could learn things that you are accustomed to. In other words, if a person ultimately, again, is a Balkari, so they can't learn anything, but stuff that they are well-versed in, they are allowed to learn. As long as you don't begin to go ahead and delve into Mishnah. In other words, you can't learn in depth. You could kind of just learn a little bit superficially with things, topics that you're already knowledgeable about. Rabbi Yonasan ben Yosef Omer, Matzia hu es HaMishnah, ve'ina Matzia sa'gimara. Rabbi Yonasan ben Yosef says, you could delve into Mishnah, excuse me, but you can't delve into Gemara. Rabbi Nassim ben Avishalom Omer, Af Matzias HaGemara. You can even go ahead and delve into Gemara. Or Bilvat Shal Yomer Askaro Shebo. As long as you don't mention the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu whenever it's brought up in Gemara. Okay? So just different opinions really as to what like the Balkari is allowed to do. Rabbi Yochanan HaSandler, Tamidosh Rabbi Akiva, Mishur Rabbi Akiva Omer. So Rabbi Yochanan HaSandler, who was a student of Rabbi Akiva, we'll say, I'll just point out over here, you know, it's always striking, right? Why don't you just call him Rabbi Yochanan? Why don't you call him Rabbi Yochanan HaSandler? Why don't you call him Rabbi Yochanan the Shoemaker? So we'll say, remember again, everything in the Gemara is meaningful and impactful and teaches us dramatic lessons. A lot of times we think that greatness in Torah is only reserved for those people whose sole occupation is Torah. But if I have a day job, then okay, I could learn, I could definitely learn, but I don't really have the ability or the bandwidth or the time to really become great in Torah. So we'll say, what does the Gemara do? So the Gemara tells us that is patently false. There are plenty of people who had occupations, plenty of people who had day jobs. Rabbi Yochanan Sandler, right? It's not a metaphor. He was a shoemaker. That's what he did. And yet with that, he became great in Torah. anyone could become great in Torah if they choose to apply themselves to the learning and absorption of Torah, even if my days cannot be spent fully immersed in the Beis Medrash. A really incredible idea. So Rabbi Yochanan Sandler says in the name of Rabbi Akiva, Leikonis leMedrash kol Iker, that a Balkari shouldn't learn Medrash at all. The Amrila, Leikonis leBeis haMedrash kol Iker. Others say Rabbi Yochanan Sandler meant to say that a Balkari shouldn't enter into the Beis Medrash at all. Rabbi Hudon Rehuda says, Shonehu behilchos derech eretz. So Rabbi Huda said, remember what we saw before, that a Balkari is permitted to learn the halachos of Derech Eretz. Literally, the halachos of Derech Eretz. The Gemara tells a story. Maisa Rabbi Huda, we will say first of the white lines, Maisa Rabbi Huda, Shera'a Keri. Listen to this. So Hayam Ahalech Gavanar. So we'll say, listen to this. One time Rabbi Huda had a seminal emission. And he was walking on the banks of the river with his students. And what happens? Amrulo Tamidov. So his students said to him, Rabbeinu, Shana Lanu Perek Echa Behilchos Derech Eretz. They said, Rebbe, teach us a halacha in Hilchos Derech Eretz. Watch this story, by the way. What did he do? Yarad v'taval v'shanalahem. He jumped in the river. He went to the mikvah. Amru lo. So the student said, Rebbe, lo kachli maratana rabbeinu shonahu b'Hilchos Derech Eretz. So Rebbe, you taught us that a Balkari is permitted to learn Hilchos Derech Eretz. So why did you have to go to the mikvah? Amru lohem, afa pi shemekal ani al achirim, Machmir ani alatzmi. Even though I am lenient for others, I am machmir on myself. So both say, there's a lot of really profound lessons in this story. So first again, I both say, what's really interesting about this is you would think that like for the Rebbe to kind of jump in the river, thereby acknowledging that he had a seminal emission, whatever the source of that is like a little bit awkward. Yet I will say, yet amazingly, it's not. You know, part of the beauty of Yiddishkeit is that the truth is there are normal things in life. You know, we'll say, you know, Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva. We know that when a woman is in Nida, there's a series of harchakos. In addition to intimacy being prohibited, there are other things that are prohibited. So one of the things that you can't do when your wife is in Nida is you can't hand her something directly. So someone asked Moshe Shaila, was a newlywed couple, and they were with family for Shabbos, and they knew the situation was going to come. I don't remember all the details, but essentially was by Havdalah, they're passing around the Besamim. So the husband wants to hand it directly to his wife. Why? Because if he puts down the Besamim, ultimately again, and then his wife picks it up, everybody's going to see, she's in Nida. So Rav Moshe says something amazing. Rav Moshe answered, he said, first of all, everyone should mind their own business. Right? No. That's number one. He said, number two, who cares if people know that she's in Nida? When a woman is in Nida and she's menstruating, that means that her body is working normally. That means that she's a healthy woman. It's a part of life. It's not shameful. It's not embarrassing. It's not part of the beauty of Yiddishkeit. And this is the incredible. Yeah, so Rabbi Huda had a seminal emission. It sounds strange, right? It sounds strange just to say it. Rabbi Huda had a seminal emission. So students wanted him to teach them Torah. He's like, all right, guys, give me a second. Let me just go into the mikvah. Goes into the mikvah. He's like, it's the beauty of Torah that Yiddishkeit embraces all of the realities of life and teaches us how to navigate them. And ultimately, again, there's no need for embarrassment or no need for awkwardness in any type of situation. It's really beautiful. The other takeaway lesson as well say is that last line before the two dots. Rabbi Yehuda said, Shemekel ani al achirim umachmir ani al atzmi. This is the most incredible mantra for life. The most important mantra for life. Be makel, be lenient for other people, and be stringent with yourself. If you want to have normal human relationships, you need to learn to give people a pass. If you hold people to the highest standard, you are going to be perpetually disappointed because people try, but often who says I'm setting the right standards for them? So ultimately, the best way to live life is with almost no expectations of anyone. No expectations. And that way, when people do something incredible, they've exceeded expectations. You're like, wow. There are people who walk through life and they expect everything from everyone. And what's their general disposition? Wow. General disposition is they're braggish, they're angry, they're disappointed, they're disillusioned, and they're jaded. Just to name a few qualities, right? Right? And like, I can't believe this one didn't do this and this one didn't do that. Well, first of all, who gave you the right to create expectations for other people? How do you know even they have the ability to live up to them? And why do people have to live up to the expectations that you set for them? Instead, there's a better approach. Expect nothing of no one. Now, I know When people say that, it often sounds cynical. But it's not cynical. It's not cynical. Just be makel with people. Go through life knowing people try their best. They try their best. Do they come through? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Do they try? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But be makel with other people. And suddenly you're able to see that, wow, I can really get along with almost everyone. But while it's good to be makel on other people, never be makel on yourself. When it comes to the standards you hold yourself to, when it comes ultimately to the expectations you have of yourself, then you gotta be machnir. Be makel for other people. Don't hold them to such high standards or expectations. But ultimately, again, hold yourself to the highest levels of expectations. Be machmir with yourself. All right, Debo, so I'll stop over here for tonight. Again, a tremendous shout out to Reb Chaim for last night. Everyone is invited to join us for Chasidus. Emir Tzashem beginning now.